Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Steve invites you to check out KPP Financial's Select Growth and Income Programs, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. This popular strategy utilizes KPP's unique market expertise and adaptability to select top fund managers who produce quality portfolios for every market condition. And to find out more, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab. Or send Steve a note directly. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. End of commercial. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. It is March 16, 2016. Above average investing for the average investor. That's the method that we use to try to make us all better investors. Justin Klein and I are registered investment advisors. That's our day job. And we're happy to devote this hour at the end of our day to extend the reach outward if we can, offering our experience to help you if you'll let us. And to make best possible decisions about your money. It's all about your money. Even if you let a money manager like myself, investment advisor like myself, manage your funds, it's still your money. You still need to know what's going on. You want to know what's going on. You should know. It's your money. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime you want. You can also send me a note by clicking on Contact Steve or Contact Justin if you want to send him one at investtalk.com. Now, this week in financial history, in 1983, you know what happened in 1983? OPEC was created. They were created in 1960. In 1983, they cut production. And they were created in September of 1960. In five countries, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Venezuela started OPEC. And since then, OPEC has been pretty much a key to setting prices for oil, except for recent history. Today, with the increase in U.S. output, with our shale production, their influence worldwide prices, not so much, pretty much diminished. They don't really, because with these low prices we have a supply glut, Saudi Arabia does not want to lose market share, either does Russia. They don't want to lose market share. So they don't want to cut down production, which will lose market share. And of course, we're producing more. Iran's coming on board with more. So what that makes more of a supply glut. So they still want to hold on market share. So prices come down. They're trying to put out of business the more expensive producers, is what their idea is. That's what Saudi Arabia has clearly said that. That's not a secret. And, business is tough. It's cutthroat. Business of every stripe is cutthroat. Don't think it isn't. That's what I love about these politicians. They pass all these rules and laws and regulations, and they don't realize that business is tough. You don't need to make it tougher. But anyway, back to OPEC, back to oil producers. And, of course, we have a glut. We all know that. Iran wants to wrap up their oil production to 4 million barrels per day. In 2016, that's just more pressure on pushing prices down because we have so much. Now, you've also seen since February, oil prices gone up 40%. February this year, 40%. 40%. Huge rebound in oil. But if you go back to 2014, oil prices are down 65%. So this recent run-up is not that big of a deal. It's nice. And will it help? Who will it help and who would it hurt? And who it's going to help, but it might be a little too late, will be the energy sector. Shale producers. Might be too late for them, many of them. And I cannot see oil prices staying this high. I think you're going to have a pullback because we have such a big supply. The only way that we wouldn't is if the economies around the world start picking up. Then there'll be more demand, even though we have plenty of supply. There'll be more demand. Remember, it's always future. Look at the future. If the demand is going to go up in the future, then the prices will go up today. Will that happen? Do you have a question about investing in oil? We talked about it many times. Do you have any more questions about that? Or maybe you just want to maybe something more personal. Whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about. Maybe real estate. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's get to a question right now. Let's go to Sam in San Jose. How you doing, Sam?
Hey, Steve. Thanks a lot for the show.
Thank you for calling.
Really appreciate it. I wanted your opinion on two stocks. One is Chipotle. Second one is Valiant Pharmaceuticals. Both of them have been bet down quite a bit. Do you think it's a good time to enter?
Maybe Chipotle, but I wouldn't do Valiant. Chipotle, everybody, because, and I'll tell you why, Sam, and this is a really good lesson for everybody. The reason why I say maybe Chipotle is because they had a big problem, lots of bad news because of food poisoning, right? We all know about that. All in the news, they took huge steps to try to correct that, and I think that particular problem is probably behind them. So, I think it has a better shot going forward of recovery. I do. I really do. Now, the problem is it's not a cheap stock. It's still expensive. And, you know, this bad news it had really hurt their sales growth. And so now the question is will they recover the sales growth? And I think they may not recover all the sales growth, but I think they'll recover some of that. So the only fear of Chipotle is it might be too expensive to buy. In other words, the P/E ratio is very high. It's supposed to make $8 this year after making $15 last year per share, but then rebound to $15 next year again. See, so they're saying it's going to come back. Now, Valiant, I think it's VAL, if I remember right, the symbol, isn't it? Or
yep.
VRX.
Yep.
VRX?
Yeah.
Yeah, VRX. Valiant Pharmaceuticals. That one has a problem that may be ongoing, and that's a numbers problem. Bookkeeping problem. I think they came out with news today and it got really crushed is that, you know, the numbers are going to be downgraded. Numbers meaning earnings and problems with their balance sheet is not what it says, it's not what it really is. We have to redo it. And I'll tell you this, Tim, from a historical, whenever I see companies having bad books, bookkeeping being bad or having to rejigger it, it always seems to be more bad news coming out, and I can't tell you. I don't think it's done. Whereas I think Chipotle's bad news is behind them. I don't think Valiant Pharmaceuticals' bad news is behind them yet. Not all of it. I thought it might be, but I don't think so. Not yet. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for appreciate the question. You look at Valiant, you see that their P/E ratio is really, really, really low. So it looks cheap. It looks so cheap. It only looks cheap because the stock has been crushed. The stock has been crushed because the numbers are not going to be what they appear to be. So you look at value and think, well, that's a bargain compared to the numbers for Chipotle. But again, it's whether the problems are behind them or not. I think Valiant still has problems in front of them, whereas Chipotle has the problems are all behind them. That's my opinion, though. I could be wrong. I just been around so long, I kind of feel that this Valiant problem is going to hang around, whereas Chipotle's problem is done. These government securities have their pros and cons. Investors should know them before making a choice. We're talking about the advantages and disadvantages of U.S. Treasury bonds, bills, notes. Do you know what the differences are? It's U.S. Treasuries. That's going to be our main talking point. More fund managers see global economy near its late cycle growth phase. Late cycle meaning the growth in the world economy is getting pretty long in the tooth. And there, what's the next thing after growth? Shrinkage. So they see that. I want to talk about that a little bit. I also want to talk about the energy bond defaults, the energy sector bond defaults. You know, we talk about where oil's made a pretty big comeback in, you know, just in a month or so, and prices. Is it too little, too late? The worst and best cities to buy a house for the first-time buyers. And we're talking about cities with 300,000 people or more. The worst and best cities. And just to tell you, five worst cities are in California. And we're talking about nationwide cities. I'm not just here. The five worst are in California. Can you believe that? The five best are all in the Midwest. So we'll talk about those cities. I thought that was kind of a fun thing. Those are items I'm going to discuss today, unless you have something else you want me to talk about, which I will do. The market was up after the Fed met, and there was news out that, of course, you know the Fed's not going to raise rates anytime soon. And so the market was down before that, but then it rallied late. Dow was up 74, the NASDAQ up 35, and the S&P up 12. And it's really trying to reach the high of the year that started January 1st. Remember, the first month of January is the worst January in history, down about 10%. And the market has been struggling to regain that, to get back to where it was. It's still not there. I think the Dow is about 500 points from that point. I think if I read that right this morning. I didn't look at the other two, but I know they're below it too. So that's what happened in the market today. It was nothing momentous. And it's, you know, it's on a rebound from the fall. And the rebound has been pretty strong so far. So far, it's been pretty strong. So the question is can it exceed the old high and move to new highs? That would be great if it could do that. But we'll see. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk, made possible by our firm KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. One of our more popular Saturday morning wealth conferences will be presented as a webinar coming up on April 13th. Survival and Opportunities in a Volatile Market. Remember we did that in late January, early February up in the Bay Area, and that was, everybody was very interested. It's still a very volatile market, right? Down and up. It's free, but you do need to sign up. You can go there now on investtalk.com. Let's talk to Michael and Tracy. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing real good, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Hey, I was at the seminar in San Jose. You guys put on a fantastic seminar. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Looking forward to actually the next one in the Bay Area.
Thank you.
My question is this. I'm a podcast listener, and what's the difference between a dividend and a yield?
Okay, very good question. I bet you a lot of people don't know what that is. They hear the terms, but they really don't know what they are. A yield usually is, you have a dividend yield, you have a bond yield, so on and so forth. Okay, the yield is the word that describes how much are they paying. Okay, what is the actual percentage or dollars or pennies? How much are they paying? What am I getting? And when you're talking about bonds, it's usually expressed in interest. An interest rate. I get 3%. I get 5%. That's the yield of the bond. When you're talking about dividend, it's usually expressed in pennies or dollars. I get $1.12 per share. I get 50 cents per share in the dividend. Okay, the dividend yield. So the yield is what they're paying. Dividend is what describes what a stock does. It's providing a dividend. Yield is how much is it? Okay? Yield.
Okay. So a dividend, a yield would be percentage or dollars, or yeah. A dividend would be percentage or dollars.
Almost always in a dividend from a stock, it's presented in dollars, pennies and dollars. But it can be percentage too, but it's almost always reported in pennies or dollars. Whereas a bond, it's almost always reported, the yield is almost always reported as a percentage, a 5% yield on the bond. A dividend always refers to a stock, what it pays.
Dividend.
Okay?
Okay. All right. Very good. Appreciate the information.
Thanks for the call. Hope I made that clear. Hope I did. Why not invest 3 minutes of your time and get to know yourself a little bit better? I'm talking about our award-winning risk analysis tool on InvestTalk.com, InvestTalk.com with two T's. You can get it for free right there on the front page. $88.99 chart. Let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages of U.S. Treasury securities. U.S. Treasury securities. First of all, you have to kind of know what they are. They will refer to U.S. Treasuries with three terms. They'll be bonds, bills, and notes. Do you know what the differences are? It's just to make the whole issue more confusing. Bonds, when you talk about U.S. Treasury and you hear people talking about U.S. Treasury bonds, it's usually talking about a debt with maturities of 10 years or more, bonds, long term, when they're referring to U.S. Treasuries. If it's between 2 and 7 years maturity, that's usually a note, and under 2 years is a bill. Why, you might ask, and I'll answer that question with, I don't know, because they want to. Well, what's the advantages? Well, the good thing about U.S. Treasuries of any kind, bills, bonds, or notes, is that you'll never lose a dime. You'll never lose a dime. It's totally guaranteed by the government, 100% guaranteed. Now, you'll say, well, what if the government goes bankrupt? Well, it doesn't matter. They'll just print the money anyways and give it to you. Here you go. Might be worthless at that point, but they'll still complete it, and you'll never lose your money. So you get your money plus the yield that the bonds pay, 5%, 2%, 0.5%, whatever that yield is. You get your money back plus the yield. That's one of the main best things about U.S. Treasuries. You never lose a dime. Another good, another key or important thing to know is that, there's no default risk, but they're also very liquid. You can sell them, you can buy them. Their market's totally, you don't have to hold them maturity. You can sell them anytime you want. Unlike other bonds, some bonds are not liquid. You can't sell them. Most bonds are high quality bonds are liquid. Well, so what are the disadvantages? Well, of course, like any bond, you have interest rate risk. Interest rate risk. If interest rates go up, the bonds, the long-term bonds you're holding in the Treasury, they'll go down in value. You can hold it to maturity, but they'll still go down in value in between, and then they'll go back to par. Probably don't know what that word means either. They go back to what the original purchase price was, par, when they mature. But they do have interest rate risk. Interest rates goes up or down. It affects the value of the bond. So that's one of the problems that they can have. They're very safe. They're much safer than anything. They're the most safest investment you can have out there. Okay, so that's really the key for U.S. Treasuries of any length of time, the safetiness of them. Okay, that's enough about bonds. I don't like bonds. Well, I don't want to say I don't like them. They're boring. They bore me. I like them, but they're still boring. They're a good way to, reduce a lot of risk, but they're boring. That's all there is to it. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you, do you think now would be a good time to pick up SH?
The short S&P 500?
Yeah, short position.
No, SH does not triple anything. That is a single. It's an exchange-traded fund. SH is a pro-share short S&P 500. It's an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the inverse return of the S&P 500. So, in other words, if the S&P 500 goes down, this will go up. It shorts the S&P 500, but it's not leveraged. Double or triple.
Okay,
it's just,
I thought it might be.
I'll say this: we recently bought this, by the way.
Oh.
So that tells you what we think. Don't misunderstand me. We also bought some longs recently as well, but we also put this on. We're still hedging our bets. It's a long. Go ahead.
Is 10% too much, do you think, of my 401k? And this would be kind of like an offset or a hedge.
Do you have any other hedges in there?
I've got the oil and...
that would not be a hedge, necessarily. If you don't have any other hedges against the market, I would say, no, that's not too much. Because it's an...
Oh, okay. I don't have any other hedges.
Yeah, it's an ETF, hedging against the market. I think that's not too much.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
All right.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Art. Appreciate it. Yeah, you know what? I'm just, you know, the market's running up, and that's great. Love it. Very happy about it. But the question you have to ask yourself is it going to break the high? And as it approaches that high, it seems like it's getting tougher and tougher to keep going up. And so we think if it breaks through it, then you get out of your hedges. You say, okay, apparently the market's on a new bull phase. Let's just run with it as long as we can. If it doesn't, then this is the time you would put on hedges. I have been trying to teach you that you buy when there's sellers and you sell when there's buyers. Now, what have we had recently in the last month or so? Buyers. So you sell to the buyers. You sell short. Right? Now, we've also bought some long positions along the way. So just in case we're wrong. You know, that's a job of managing money. You gauge the risks. You listen to Invest Talk coming up on the next half hour, analyzing the company income statement. 888-99-CHART. You can call right now.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. On the next Invest Talk, that winning stock pick or high-yielding bond may eventually come with a big tax bill attached. Asset location minimizes taxes and builds wealth. That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk. We hope you'll join us then. We continue now with this Wednesday, March 16th Invest Talk. Do you have a money question? We're here to help. 888-99-CHART is how to get through anytime.
888-992-4278. Most fund managers see global economy near the end of its cycle. We're in the late growth cycle of economy worldwide. 59%, according to a Bank of America survey, think that we are in the late cycle of our growth, economically speaking, around the world. By the way, 59% is the highest since August of 2008. That's the last time it was at 59%, where people, we're talking about fund managers, mutual fund managers, people are supposed to be smart, but don't always take everything with a grain of salt. Now, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, predicts that we're going to have 3.4% growth this year and 3.6% growth, this is world economic growth, next year. 3.4 this year, 3.6 next year. I doubt it seriously that I have a feeling they will downgrade this year's growth. I don't know about next year's, probably also. But that seems awful optimistic to me. But it can be. I mean, you know, they're just as smart as everybody else. But it certainly is in contradiction to the fund managers who think that economic growth is slowing, or we're in late cycle growth phase, which means slowing. So who's right? And, of course, here in the U.S., our Federal Reserve has lowered our GDP growth rate predictions for this year, lowered it, and that's not uncommon. I'll tell you, these bodies, the international bodies, the Fed Reserve, and all the other national federal banking, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, they always seem to be optimistic. They always seem to be too optimistic. At the beginning of the year, they have projections that always are upbeat, and then they downgrade them as the year goes on. Same way with private sector analysts about earnings. They're always optimistic at the beginning of the quarter, and then they downgrade as the quarter goes along. Seems that way pretty consistently to me over the years. Now, sometimes they make a mistake on the low side, but that they don't want to make a mistake on the low side. They want to make the mistake on the high side to make everything look great. Oh, everything looks so good. And then by the end of the quarter, especially in the, you know, corporate earnings, end of the quarter, they like to really downgrade them so that they can beat their earnings estimates and then pound the desk and see how great that was. You really, really have to understand the game that's being played. They're trying to manage your expectations, you meaning the investor. And the Federal Reserve does it too. Politicians do it too. Everybody wants to manage your expectations. and especially in the United States, because the consumer is all powerful here. When your expectation is, oh, things are doing great, you tend to be happier and you spend more, and it drives our economy. So you make it come true, if you have optimistic growth projections, by what you do as a consumer. That's why they do it. They want to control things by managing expectations. You, as an investor, all you have to do is understand that that's what's going on. Understand how the game is played. That's all you need to do. Therefore, you can invest with more knowledge. Don't save your questions. If you have a question that is about the basics, well, we're here to answer that too. Experienced or beginner questions are always welcome. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Dave from Pennsylvania, podcast listener. I had a question about Taro Pharmaceuticals, ticker is TARO. I had purchased this about a month ago. I really liked the company, the almost no debt whatsoever. Looked like things were trending up, starting to just look like a really good buy. I'm just a little confused as to why it's headed downward. Like I said, it's recently crossed the 200-day moving average. Looks like it hit some resistance twice at around 145, 147 recently. The only thing I can figure out that it looks like its RSI dropped below 30, so maybe it's just diluted from being oversold. But when I look at fundamentals and technicals, I don't really see why this is dropping. I'm down 9% in the last month or so. Just wondering if you had an opinion on this. Try and help me figure this one out. Maybe this is just one of those things that happen, I guess, and it'll pick back up. I'm pretty confident it'll pick back up, but just curious as to why it's falling other than being oversold, which may likely be the case. Thanks again. Really enjoy the podcast. Thanks.
Well, he's correct. I can't see anything fundamentally wrong with it. Taro, T-A-R-O, Pharmaceuticals, it is out of Israel, manufactures prescription and over-the-counter generic drugs for dermatol, different cardiovascular, different drugs. It's a $5.8 billion company. It made $11.32 in 2015. It's going to make $11.92 this year and $13.73 per share next year. Very good growth of earnings. Sales growth has been pretty strong, even though a quarter ago, that quarter was down 15%. But now it's going to rebound up 9%. The quarter before that was up 65%. So the P/E ratio is around 10. It's a $135 stock with a $13.73 per share projection. So that means the P/E is a little bit below 10. Now it's going to pay a dividend, has a great return on equity, has very good cash flow, has virtually no debt. There's nothing that you can say that's wrong. Mutual funds are buyers. There's nothing wrong with this company. For me, looking at it, this looks more like an opportunity to buy, not an opportunity to sell. It's still holding up. Yeah, it bottomed in January, ran up, and now it's pulled back. I'm wondering why it pulled back, and I'm just wondering, it may not be Taro Pharmaceuticals' problem. It might be the industry's problem. You know, we have Valiant Pharmaceuticals, which is really got crushed. And maybe it's sometimes it's not the company, it's the industry it's in. Or a company that's very similar to this company is having problems, like Valiant Pharmaceuticals, and therefore they have problems. Or it could be political. It's out of Israel. Maybe where do they sell most of their product? But when you look at a company, and if you looked at it correctly, and you have, from what I can see, the fundamentals look strong. So if the fundamentals are not being impacted, other than there's something else going on that's affecting it that has nothing to do with this particular company, then that smells like an opportunity to me to buy. That's what it smells like, and it looks like that might be the case. I definitely want to, I would do some studying, reading articles about this company, find out. I mean, they just had recently announced a buyback of what, $250 million in buyback, which is not a huge buyback at a $5.8 billion company. There's some analyst reports out. These things I would read and find out, maybe try to find out what's going on. Why is it? Maybe their quarterly profits was a little bit less than expectations. That could cause it. You know, that kind of thing. But Taro, T-A-R-O, looks pretty good to me. It's time for InvestTalk 101, how to determine net profit margin. That's a really important factor when you analyze a company's income statement. Net profit margin. What is net profit margin? Okay, that is the profit after the taxes and expenses. So it's a profit that the sales generate, but after all the costs, that's what I get to put in my profit. And we talk about profit margins. You know, the margin of profit. How much profit does this company make? What percentage of it does it get to keep? And they vary from sector to sector. You can't just say, well, profit margin is 10%. Oh, that's great. Uh-huh. No, it's not. It's pretty bad in tech. Pretty good in old standard industries like steel. See, so it depends. Depends. You know, like Walmart. Walmart, you can increase your profits, but not your margin. You can increase your profits by more sales. As a matter of fact, you can lower your margin to increase the sales, so you have more dollars coming in, but the profit margin shrank because you're competing out there for more business. For instance, Walmart, they have a profit margin of 3 to 4%. Dillard's has a profit margin of 7 to 8%. But Walmart makes 34 times the profits that Dillard does because they're so big and they sell so much more. Now, you got to be careful of this when you lower your profit margins, especially if you're a high-end producer. You don't want to make your high-end brand look cheap. Of course, that's not a problem for Walmart because that's where you go there because of cheapness. But let's say you're a Tiffany company. You think they're going to squeeze their profit margins to gather more business? No way. They want to maintain their brand. So, and different sectors have different margins. It's high tech, high margins. Oil, you know, I love it when they whine about the oil companies and they make so much money when oil prices go up. And then you look at their margins and it's only about 10%. That's what they average, oil companies. Then you look at a company like, I don't know, how about Apple? Their margin, I think, is like 40%. But you don't hear people saying they make too much money. But ExxonMobil, oh, they make too much money. Well, their margins are not that big. It's not like they're gouging. They're just huge. You know, that's all. Anyway, so you kind of have to look at it that way. You have to kind of analyze the companies. For you as an investor, see, you know, don't let politics blind you to what the facts are of your company. And should you be buying this company? Are the margins good? Or I like to buy companies with margins expanding, not shrinking. If you have a question for me about analyzing companies' income statements, you can check in right now, 888-99-CHART, or you can send me a note by clicking on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Life insurance. It can get quite complicated. Understanding life insurance is one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access to these info sheets and more. Sign up now. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
You know, I noticed a typo on my insurance info sheet, which is kind of funny. Instead of insurrection, where I say that the most homeowners policies don't exclude insurrection, I said resurrection. So I got to change that. So I think one person caught that so far. Anyway, let's go to Matt, Redwood City. How are you doing, Matt?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I went through an exercise this morning that you've always described as painful, and that is it's always easy to buy and very difficult to sell.
Right.
I went through and looked at my utilities this morning, both in an ETF and a few individual equities, and I lightened up on them.
Okay.
And I was looking at putting that money into financials, primarily an ETF XLV. Victor, it's a Vanguard ETF.
X as in X-ray, L as in Larry, V as in Victor?
Yes, correct.
Okay, that's not the Vanguard, that's the exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the S&P healthcare sector.
Okay, I'm sorry, I swapped them. VFH is the one I'm thinking of. I'm sorry, Victor Frank Henry.
Victor Hank. What was it? Okay.
V is in Victor. F is in Frank Henry.
Okay, that's a Vanguard Financials, correct. Okay, change traded funds taking performance corresponding to the U.S. Financials 2550 Index. Okay. Okay, so you think financials is where you want to be as opposed to the utility sector?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
what are your thoughts?
I think financials are, it's going to, they've had a nice rebound. But notice they have not rebounded as much as the overall market. I think the financials are too risky at this point. I think there's too much risk built in it. With the Graham-Dodd Act and all the rules and regulations on them, I think their profit margins are going to be squeezed. And I kind of still think we need to have a much bigger pull down to make them attractive to me. So I don't think you want to be in the financials, my personal opinion. And believe it or not, you're not going to like this, but I kind of like utilities right now.
Well, and
the reason why I like utilities.
I've done so well with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's okay. You can take profits, Matt. There's never a problem with taking profit. But the reason why I like utilities is they're more defensive. In a market and our economy that might be peaking, utilities are usually the ones that hold up pretty well. Because historically, they're known to pay a dividend, right? In utilities, everybody still needs utilities no matter what happens in the economy. But I do not have any problem with lightening up, taking profits on them. I don't.
Okay.
But I don't know if I'd run to financials. I don't think so. If we get a pullback in oil, that's where I would run to.
Okay.
In the energy sector.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Steve.
Appreciate the call, Matt. Thank you. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
I was hoping you'd look at HK and give me your opinion, please.
Okay, HK is Helicon Resources Corporation out of Houston, Texas, engaged in exploration and production of oil and natural gas, primarily in Texas, Mississippi, and North Dakota. So they are probably a shale play, right? Even though it has looks like a very low PE of 2 because it made 97 cents last year a share, this year they're going to lose 8 cents, and next year they're going to lose $2.07 a share. I would not buy this. I think it has a very strong possibility of going out of business. Very strong.
Okay.
Don't buy it. It's way too much debt. They're carrying way too much debt, and I don't think they can refinance that debt. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. And of course, if they can refinance the debt and survive, it's a great bargain. But I don't know. That's the roll of the dice, the survivability. Our InvestTalk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer any of your questions you might have, any money questions. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Bill in Santa Cruz. How you doing, Bill?
Excellent, Steve. Good afternoon. Hi, I'm a client, and I was at the seminar a few weeks ago.
Thank you.
And that was great. I'm curious. I have another account and a couple other accounts, actually, a Roth and another individual IRA, traditional IRA. And I have some AT&T in both of those, mm-hmm. and I'm probably a little bit overweighted in it, but the price has gone up. I bought it for the yield, and I'm thinking of selling 100 shares, but I'm just wondering about timing. Is it an uptrend where maybe if I wait a month, I'll get a couple more bucks out of it? Or
yeah, I would definitely want to trim that. Okay, Bill, I think you should trim it, but don't just go and say I'm going to sell it right now. No, because it might continue marching up. So what I would do is draw a trend line. Do you know how to do that? A trend line, because it's an upward trend, and until it broke that trend line on the downward swing, I would hold it. I would not sell it until that happens. And we did that a while back, and it broke that trend line, and then it continued to march up. So that kind of ticked me off. But
I was curious. That was kind of my way of thinking, but I just wasn't sure, and I wanted to get a confirmation from you.
And what could happen to you, Bill, is what happened to us. We put a trend line in because we thought it was moving up pretty too fast, And then in 3 days or 4 days, it broke that trend. We said, okay, well, that was the rule we said. So, and now, and then it started marching up again. And to kind of, but that's the danger when you have a trend line, because a trend line is a pretty tight stop out.
Yeah.
It's pretty tight.
So it just almost depends on, you know, my mood on it. Like, well, I just want to take some now, or, you know, feel more secure to do that.
Yeah, you said, it was getting kind of heavy in your portfolio. And so,
just a little bit.
Yeah, so this gives you an excuse to rebalance it if it breaks the trend. If it keeps marching up, then you just stick with it and you're very happy. You're a happy camper, you know.
Very good. Yeah. Can I ask you about Cummins also? You have that in the, one of your accounts.
Yeah, we just recently bought Cummins. Cummins engine, a CMI, if I remember right, is the symbol. And now I was just talking about AT&T and the symbol's T, everybody. I assume everybody knew that, but maybe I shouldn't assume that. Cummins engine is, we liked it because it fell sharply for no good reason as its earnings are starting to pick up again. So we felt that is cheap enough, because a five-year average is 9 to 12 PE range, and it based on next year's earnings, it's, you know, close to about 12. So 9 to 20 is a PE range, and it's close to about 12. So return on equity is 21%. It pays almost a 4% dividend. So it kind of fits really nicely with a value play. And if you feel like the auto industry is still sound, if the oil's so low, you figure trucking and engine making should do well over the next couple of years. So that was the reason why.
That's something you might continue to hold for another 10-20 bucks or for another year or more?
Yeah. We have a price target of about at least $140 to $150 on it. It's $106 now.
We're
just hoping that just go back to where it was last year sometime. That's all. We'll be happy.
Very good.
Okay?
That sounds good to me. Thank you so much, Steve. Have a good one.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Thanks for the compliment on the conference. I'm glad you could make it. 888-99-CHART. And, you know, I like putting on those conferences. I think they're kind of fun. And I'm always hoping that people get information out of them. That's all informational if you ever want to go. And remember, we're having a podcast of that same conference. Problem is, the conference is 3 hours and something, and the podcast is an hour. So we can't fit everything in. The webinar is only an hour. So you don't get the same massive amount of information in the byplay and being able to ask questions. But it does provide you with the basics, the bones of the conference that we have. So if you can make the webinar, I think it'd be good for you. Our time is up. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the worst and best place for first-time buyers of a house. Worst with which cities with 300,000 people or more. Do that tomorrow. Our time is up. A reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, which is a registered investment advisor firm. We manage money for people. Love to do it for you. For Justin Klein, everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today, and I hope you can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.